Hello, Guilty Feminists. This is producer Tom here. Deborah is in Australia at the moment, and so I'm just jumping in to give you a few quick announcements. First of all, if you are in Australia, Deborah's tour there continues. You can see The Guilty Feminist recorded live in Perth on Monday the 20th of May, Sydney on Thursday the 23rd of May, Melbourne on Saturday 25th of May, Brisbane Monday 27th of May, and we finish in Canberra on Tuesday 28th of May. If London is closer to home, we'll be recording Guilty Feminist episodes at our regular home of King's Place on the 12th of June and the 15th of July. And we also have a special episode of Global Pillage, the comedy panel show where two teams of comedians take on the hive mind of the audience. That's hosted by Abigailia Shimon, and it's on Monday the 17th of June. And finally, if you're going to be at the Edinburgh Fringe, The Guilty Feminist will be recording three live episodes at the Gilded Balloon at the Museum on August the 12th to the 14th at 7:40 p.m. For tickets and more information about all of these, go to guiltyfeminist.com. And now, on with the podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm a feminist, but when I was on Celebrity Pointless, that aired this past Saturday of the recording time, when I was asked to name actors from the 1989 in 2022 Batman, I couldn't remember a single female actress's name. And it was Kim Basinger and Zoe Kravitz were in them. And I was like, Michael Keaton? I felt horrible for that. I still got the trophy.
Did you get the trophy?
I got the trophy.
Did you get the trophy?
I got the trophy.
Wow.
I was very proud of that.
I'm a feminist, but I love nothing more than to watch the Oscars so I can criticize all the red carpet dresses. I would never, ever do it in public because, you know, you never know who might see it. And also other people feel judged and all of that. But in a WhatsApp group where we all understand the boundaries, oh my God, I'm fully fucking going there. Love it. Love it. I'm very happy to criticize for quite unfeminist things like that top's too low. Like, what? Yeah. In real life, I would never say that. But it's red carpet rules. I feel like I've been given permission by Joan Rivers.
When you're wearing an outfit that costs the same as some people's mortgages,
yeah,
it's fair game. Anyone can say whatever they want about
you. I feel like it's punching up. And I wouldn't do it in public because I think it's not nice to go on and slag other women off online. But it's absolutely fine in person.
Yeah. I'm a feminist, but when my agent told me she was going on maternity leave, my first thought was, this is going to negatively impact my career, isn't it?
Oh!
I didn't say it. I said, congratulations. I'm so happy for you. You should take the full year. Please don't take the full year. But you should take it because you deserve it.
I'm a feminist, but I admit my heart has previously sunk at the news of a woman getting pregnant. And Do you know what? It's bad enough when you work with them. It's even worse when they're your friend. And then if it's the third one, fine, whatever. They've already gone, you know. But when it's the first one, you've got a perfectly good friend. You see on a Wednesday night for cocktails. They can come, they can go, and you just go, well,
it's just over.
You're in a different chapter now. And I know I will love you forever. I'll be there for you. I'll, you know, all of that. But it's not going to be the same. And why did you have to do it? Does the world really need another baby? There's a little piece of me thinking that. There's a little piece of me thinking that. I'm happy for your good news. And I really do. Do you know what? I'm such a good person, guys.
Yeah.
That I subsume those feelings. I sit on those feelings and I go, no, they're happy. They wanted this. I can't understand why, but they wanted this. And, you know, listen, it's not going to affect my brunch.
Yeah.
It's their sleep. So I try and be supportive. But in my mind, I do think...
And you make up for it by having a pregnant woman on your podcast talk about pregnancy. And then it's all fine.
It's true. I've just realized our guest today is quite pregnant.
Did he not realize?
Oh, God,
that's why I did that. Listen, one. I was like, it's on theme.
We weren't friends. I've met her for the first time tonight. I'll tell you what, I really liked her in the dressing room. And already I'm starting to feel the loss. I think we could be friends. We could be friends. It depends how it goes. Listen, some people have babies and they... Some people, you know, which she's going to explain why it happens. Please don't write to me and say, I hate pregnant women. I really don't. It's a joke. I'm a feminist, but so where we confess the worst things we think. And sometimes I think that, but surely you do too. I love pregnant women. I'm very happy when my friends get pregnant. I know it's awful when people can't get pregnant. They really want to. That happened to me. Please don't write to me to say that I've made you feel bad. I love you pregnant. I love you with a baby. I love you without a baby. I love you all the ways that there are. And I love you, all your babies and all you people without babies. Just love you all. It's just a little thought that I have that I'm confessing because Abba Goliath confessed, which I now regret.
I'm a feminist. But on International Women's Day, when comedy clubs decide that that'll be the best time to do an all-female lineup and they send us all out to work, I secretly think I shouldn't have to work today. Pay me to stay home.
Oh, 100% that. I'm a feminist, but I am going to propose a day off a year for women. So not an international... Don't take International Women's Day away. We want that one as well, please. Because I always feel if women get something, they take something else. So please, can we have the one we've got? Because I do like getting together to have brunch and talk about how it's difficult it is to be a woman. It's enjoyable. That's what International Women's Day, isn't it? Isn't it? Isn't it?
Yeah.
So when we get together, we have a brunch sponsored by somebody. Someone else pays for lunch and or a glass of champagne, and then we talk about how difficult it is to be a woman. That's what it is. And I like it. I love it.
Me too.
Invite me to all of your brunches and all of your champagnes. But I would like to officially sponsor an International Women's Day off.
There we go. That's what
second
we need.
Second date. What sort of time of year would you like it? I'm thinking summer. And I think what should be it, like if you're in Australia, you should be able to nominate like November the or December the 2nd or something like that. We'll have it August 5th.
I think I like the idea of summer because then your day off, you go out, you enjoy the summer. But I think it should be like December 24th just to really fuck over the dudes. You know what I mean?
Oh, imagine. What if it was the same as Christmas Day? They would be apoplectic.
Oh, there you go.
They wouldn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. They'd be like, what? What?
Mm-hmm. You make
because
the freaking
it is
turkey.
It's true. Anytime there's like producing to do, like it's glamorous, like a film producer, it's almost invariably a man. But I always ask the same thing. Who produces Christmas in your house? Or fill in your festival or here, but you may not celebrate Christmas. I'll tell you, it's not a fucking man unless it's a gay man. A gay man might do Christmas.
And he will do it fabulously.
Yeah. Please don't write in to say, what about Santa? What about Jesus? I get it.
They're not doing Christmas.
The festival is around men, but they don't do the cooking. Nor do they do the washing up, in my experience. Jesus got to have a day off. It's his birthday, to be fair.
Yeah, but he didn't do anything. He just got born. Mary did all the work.
That's a great point. We're such good
Mary
feminists.
Mary did all the work.
What's
it should be called St. Mary's Day.
Wow, we're really toppling patriarchies, archaic patriarchies.
We figured it out.
We are smashing the patriarchy
yeah.
with words. Live from King's Place in London, the Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist with me, and the Brussels Light guest host Abigail Chabot, and our very special guests, India Rackerson and Amy Aker, talking about child development. This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and the hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine them. I'm Deborah Frances White. With me is Abigail Ayeshimon, and we're talking about child development, but actually literally talking about womb to coming out of the womb to the mother or other parent's response to birthing the baby and what happens to them and what happens and how society views that. It's so fascinating.
Everything I did not learn in sex ed in rural Ohio.
That is right. Yeah, we could have called the episode that.
Yeah, that basically, because growing up in a conservative part of America, I was just told if I look at a boy with my legs uncrossed, I will get pregnant. And then no one explained what happened after that.
No, well, we did. We had a year, we had a term, I think, of something called mothercraft.
Mothercraft?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds like spacecraft and witchcraft.
Yeah, mothercraft.
Sign me up.
I didn't know that was going to be so funny. Well, they apparently still have it at my school, but it's now called parentcraft. And they've included boys. But in my day, it was, no, the boys won't need to know this. This will be for women and all for girls who are going to turn into women. And it was a whole, like, term. And we all had these big project books. And we went and covered them in Contact. That was a big thing. And you cut up pictures from magazines. Mm-hmm. Children magazines were early internet. But you could hold, it was like, imagine if you could hold the internet in your hands.
It's a lot smaller then.
But none of the pictures moved. And then we'd have to write out things like, you know, dip your elbow in the milk to see that it's, or the bath water or something.
I don't remember,
but you had to dip your elbow in things to make sure it wasn't too hot for the baby.
Oh, I remember, like, with pouring the milk on the elbow.
Yeah, you don't dip your milk on the elbow, actually, thinking about it. That's probably unhygienic. You definitely dip your elbow in something. What is it, mothers?
Bath water. That makes sense.
Hey, fine. I was a nanny for a limited period. One of the children survived. Despite all odds, I was a great
You're just
nanny,
dipping your elbow into the peanut butter and the
orange. Yeah. The child's eye. So we all had to learn. And I remember there was a girl at my school. It went to school in a beach town, Australia. There was a girl at my school who was so furious at having to do this, and she said, oh, why do we have to learn this? Just stick the bloody baby on your tit and that's it. What do you need to know? And she was just so furious at the idea of learning mothercraft, which now I look back, it was quite absurd. I've never used it and I don't remember anything from it. But, you know, I'm sure if you had a baby closer to the time you left school, you'd probably get your project book out and go, oh, yep, dip your elbow in the right thing.
Yeah. I like that one girl being like, just stick the baby on your tit and get on with it. It's like very like, okay, boomer.
I'm not a boomer. I'm just
not her. Not you. Hell. Not you. This 15-year-old girl before it was even a word. She was giving boomer energy.
She was giving
in
major
mothercraft.
Boomer energy in mothercraft. Exactly. Saying that this is mothercraft gone mad, she said. why are we talking about this? Okay, because today India is going to tell us really interesting stuff about what happens to your brain if you get pregnant and you give birth to a child and all sorts of interesting things. I'm so excited to talk to her. We should do some stand-up comedy.
Oh, that's a good idea. By the way,
should we have our poet first? I think we should have the poet first.
Should we do
what?
Do
you want stand-up first?
Whatever. All I'm thinking is there's usually a clock here and it's gone.
Yeah, okay. What happened was Tom screwed up. I'm so delighted to say this because Tom is the most efficient man in the world.
Okay.
everything is perfect all of the time in terms of his, but he somehow drained the iPad, accidentally didn't plug it in or something.
Okay.
So he said, just keep an eye on the time.
Okay, and I haven't been doing that.
And he said, at some point, I'll come and glare at you.
Okay.
So Tom's face is the clock.
Today. Okay, good enough.
But we can keep... Well, I'm just going to keep an eye on the time. Yes. I don't actually know what time we're meant to come down, though, and that is a problem. Well done. Thank you so much. You're not going to stand there, though.
No, no,
okay.
No,
Lexi, thank you very much. Wait. I'll take her. Come around. But,
I got it, Dubs.
That's fantastic.
Okay, that's just your phone. You're such a sweetheart.
Well done.
Now two women with ADHD will keep time. Yeah. Let's see how it goes.
Tom, do you know what time we're meant to come down? He'll come and tell us in a second, because okay. I'm not strictly sure. It's probably on the clipboard
somewhere. But we can do whichever order.
Normally the clock counts down, so we don't need to worry. We just see the minutes draining away, and we ignore it.
Yeah. And then we still go over by 10 minutes.
We try and get it right. Let's have some stand-up comedy. Please welcome to the stage, Abigail Anshamon!
Oh, we've had the running order in front of us the whole freaking time. And we didn't
ADHD.
Even know.
We have ADHD. This isn't our skill. Our skill is riffing.
Yeah.
Our skill is being funny off the cuff and interviewing guests and all of that. That's our skill. Our skill is not looking at clipboards to see that there is a dime on the very front page, as it turns out.
We're not in charge of that. We're talent. But you know what, guys? November 11th is a very big holiday in America and here in the U of K. Very big holiday, November 11th. One person got the U of K joke. The rest of you are like, she said it wrong. I do that on purpose. Humor, guys, stay with me. November 11th, very, very big holiday. Everyone say it with me. My birthday, thank you. Thank you, it's my birthday. And this past birthday, I turned 38 years old. I know, it's very exciting. Now, it's weird. There's something that happens that I didn't know was going to happen when I hit my late 30s. Give me a cheer if in your late 30s. Woo! Now, I don't know about you guys, but all of a sudden, all of my friends who are in my age group just became ever so whiny. Did you find this? All of a sudden, all my friends, we hit our late 30s, and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so tired. I'm so tired all the time. Now that I'm in my late 30s, I'm so tired. Am I the only one who's been exhausted since they were 11? Like, because I was told growing up in Greenville, Ohio, in order to get into a very good university, I would have to do very well in school. So I did that. I worked very good in school. I did every extracurricular activity, and I got into a good university. And once I showed up in New York City, no one cared that I was a brown belt in Taekwondo. I did all that extra work for nothing. Now I'm 38. I have all the energy in the world. You know why? I cut out the extra work. I now approach my life like a white middle-class man. I do the bare minimum, but have all the confidence. And somehow, it's just weird, because I'm enjoying it. I'm liking getting older. It's fun for me. And all my friends, they're complaining. They're like, oh, gosh, now my knees are starting to hurt. My elbows are starting to hurt. My back's starting to hurt. Let me tell you guys something. Before I was a stand-up comedian, I was a professional yoga instructor. After doing that, I got really into CrossFit and would enter CrossFit competitions. I stopped working out 2 years ago. I am pain-free for the first time in my life. Getting older is freaking awesome. And all my friends are freaking out. They're like, my metabolism's slowing down. I'm getting fatter. I am the fattest I've ever been. I love it. You know why? Winter is coming. I've been Abigailia. Thank you so much.
Abigail Anshamon, everybody. Hello, Guilty Feminists. This is Deborah. You have got one last chance to see us in London before I am off on tour to Australia and New Zealand. We will be at King's Place on the 10th of April, where Alison Spittle will be co-hosting. Now, we've got a very important episode. We've talked briefly on the podcast
already about what's happening with reproductive justice in this country and abortion rights. There are currently three bills, anti-abortion bills, of varying degrees in the House of Lords at the moment. There's a two-way push for and against abortion rights creeping in that we are not really paying attention to. So we have a panel of experts, including Felicia Jung from Reproductive Justice Initiative, to talk about that. We also have some other great guests talking about a brand new study about refugees in work. And that's also going to be amazing. But I would like as many people as possible to come out because we need to be talking about, thinking about, campaigning about abortion rights in this country. France has just put it into their constitution. We don't have a constitution. We will have a section for Q&A, so you can specifically ask our panel of experts what to do, what's going on, and what's going to happen next. For tickets, go to kingsplace.co.uk and search for Guilty Feminist, or go to guiltyfeminist.com and go on live shows. Our tour down under begins, and we can announce our amazing co-hosts for these shows on the 11th of May in Auckland, the 14th of May in Wellington, and the 15th of May in Christchurch. I am going to be co-hosting for the first time with the incredible stand-up comedian from Aotearoa, Michelle Accourt. I know she's huge in New Zealand and a massive feminist, and I'm very, very excited. We tried to work with her before, and her daughter very inconveniently gave birth that night. I can't think of a more feminist reason not to come. So we're very, very excited. Then we'll be in Adelaide on the 18th of May with Geraldine Hickey. After that, we're coming to you, Perth, on the 20th of May with Claire Hooper. Then we'll be in Sydney on the 23rd of May with Geraldine Hickey. And then we'll be in Melbourne on the 25th of May. I am not allowed to say who the co-host is, but she is a big Australian favourite and she's amazing. I am not allowed to announce her yet because she's so famous and fabulous. And the guest is an A-list Australian star. Again, we're just getting permission to announce her. So I would recommend if you're in Melbourne especially, our tickets are going fast everywhere, but I would recommend if you're in Melbourne especially, you get your tickets now before the announcement is made, because you are going to want to see these people. And we also have some incredible activist voices and other special stuff going on. The last two dates are in Brisbane on the 27th of May with the wonderful Alice Fraser, and in Canberra on 28th of May, we end the tour with Kirsty Wiebeck. Grace Petrie's coming out and she's doing all the dates with me. We're also going to have poets, activists, incredible guests. It's going to be, do you remember how buzzy the tour was last time and everyone was hysterical at the end? It's going to be like that again. So do not miss out. Get tickets now at guiltyfeminist.com and click on live shows. You can also get an ad-free version of the podcast from Patreon, Apple Podcasts, or Acast Plus from as little as £2.50 a month. And that really helps to support the podcast and pay all the wonderful people who support me in bringing you The Guilty Feminist every week. You can also show support in a way that costs you nothing by going to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and giving The Guilty Feminist a 5-star review, even though you've done it before, because it really, really helps other people find us in a very crowded market with a weird algorithm pushing people further to alt-right content every week. And so we'd really, really love it if you'd tell people about it, share it online. And now back to the podcast.
Our first guest today is a poet and editor. Her debut collection, Mother Song, can you see tying into our theme, Bloomsbury 2023, is shortlisted for the John Pollard Foundation International Poetry Prize and was named a Book of the Year in The Telegraph and The Financial Times. Please welcome to the mic, Amy Acre.
Hello.
Hi. I'm going to read a couple of poems from my book, Mother Song, which is a book I wrote in response to the kind of quite staggering changes that I found happening in myself and in the way that I relate to the world and kind of to everything in my life when I had my daughter. And I think, as we're going to hear about from India later, which I'm really excited about, the changes are really quite profound, and some wonderful and some terrible. And I think that writing this book was a way of really holding on to myself and making sure that I didn't get lost. So the first poem I'm going to read is about anxiety on the underground. And it's called In the Wet Aired Trenches of the Tube. I was a tigress, cub in jaw, sniffing out cordite and saltpeter, spying war shapes in the dark. I saw the parched black mouth of the track, a long marauding animal, limbless slither, crab apple on tongue. My child, months from the womb, hung from my teeth. I ferried her by the neck and saw her death everywhere. I hung on the grit-kissed wall until the train pummeled in to replace imagination. Forgive me. I saw things I couldn't tell my therapist. I mauled thought to silence and counted my steps and talked to myself in dissertation. I saw others, smelt their milk in the slow lifts, smiled at their litters and wondered if they too saw their babies fall, if they fought escalators tumbling with fear, if we were all staring down the same muzzle, waiting for the grip to drop from our own hands. And this one is atheism. Dear Lord, fix my broken vagina that I may climb the tree of longing and find myself in its branches, feet tucked under knees, pleated skirt and no pants. Let the freckles on my husband's arm tickle not my heart but lower. Let the music of my cunt sing like the hot tap or the vibrato of the throat attached to rash hands dripping with their own enemy. Dear Lord, make porn better. Or good porn cheaper. Or just make me richer. Let the blonde on the tube platform bend again to tie her shoes when I'm alone. Let my husband clean the bath or fix a fault in the pipes that I may find him on his knees, earth-greased arms holding the house up, behind him a perfect pout. Dear Lord, let our daughter not wake as I guide his face to my waistband. Dear Lord, please fix my broken vagina because I have so many tasks in the day and I need something. I have already changed the sheets. Dear Lord, I am tired of thinking about nuns or schoolgirls or rape. I want to live in his eyes. I want my body to strike, to strobe on the bed with us and not slink a smudge on the wallpaper or draft tweet. I am scared that I've politicized touch to the point where I have cancelled my own desire and I am tired. I am so fucking tired all the time. Dear Lord, I used to have an awesome vagina. It got everything right and made friends easily. Dear Lord, since leaving home, I have belonged to 21 houses. If you leave skin everywhere, I must be paper. Dear Lord, it's me at 14, held by hands. I recall more clearly now. There is a smaller me running through the house. Dear Lord, when he holds me close, I am butter from the fridge, sticking to rip and impossibly stiff. But I remember what it feels like to melt. I know I am in here somewhere. Thank you.
Amy, come join us for a second. Amy Ecker, everybody! Oh, sorry, I thought there was another chair there. I'm so sorry. I just wanted to talk to you for a minute before you go because that was absolutely extraordinary. Mother Song is shortlisted for the John Pollard Foundation International Poetry Prize and was named a Book of the Year in the Telegraph and the Financial Times. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so it's a collection of poems that I started writing when I was pregnant with my daughter in 2017, and then kind of charts my early motherhood, but also a lot of the things in my own childhood that kind of rose up to meet me when I had this kind of small me looking at, like, for example, the loss of my father when I was young. And I think when you have this small person that looks like you, it kind of does this strange thing where you're completely changed, but it also transports you back to those really early sort of forming memories.
I'm sure. It's really beautiful poetry. And we can buy Mother's Song where? Anywhere we get our books?
From all good bookshops.
All good bookshops?
Preferably in indie. Indie bookshops, support them, but also from Waterstones and
the other one.
Yeah.
So you can get it anywhere, but make your choice wisely.
Yeah.
I think that's an absolutely beautiful book of poetry that I will certainly be devouring.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely stunning stuff. And thank you for coming and delivering these poems on theme. Have you got any other anthologies or already out or that we can look forward to?
I've got a couple of pamphlets. You can. They've got really long titles. But,
well, we'll look you up. You've got a website,
amyacre.org. I also run a small press called Bad Betty, and we publish a lot of fantastic poets, so they're worth checking out.
Absolutely wonderful stuff. Check out amyacre.org and buy her book and see what else that she's writing and publishing. Amy Acre, everybody!
Thank you so much.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Our guest today is an award-winning radio and TV presenter and producer. She focuses on personal stories that explore the impact of our fast-changing world on individuals and society. Her recent projects include hit podcast 28-ish Days Later, all about the menstrual cycle, and Witch, all about witches. For Radio 4, her BBC podcast Child explores a child's development from before it's a child, when it's a zygote, from fertilization to first birthday. Please welcome to the stage the incredible India Rakesson. India, come, take a seat.
I just want to say, India, both Deborah and I love pregnant women.
Sure.
We're such big fans. No, I genuinely am. It's just a little selfish moment of, you know,
sorry,
like...
Sorry, I can't tell you how upset I am to be here at 9:45.
It's such a bad time for
Listen, a 35-week pregnant woman to be seeing on stage.
I'm so sorry. I tried to get pregnant and I couldn't. I tried loads with IVF and stuff and I couldn't. So maybe it's a bit of selfishness in me of going, oh, well, maybe someone else won't or can't have a baby, and then we can hang out. But I'm fine about not having a baby, by the way. You don't have to be sensitive about that. Sometimes if you say that, people go, oh, they make a face like, I don't know what to say now. But I think in the end it was the right thing for me. But it doesn't mean I'm not absolutely gripped by everything. I'm just bringing up my notes. By everything, I'm not texting, by the way, I've got notes on my phone, because I listened to this podcast series and I was just so gripped and I had so many different thoughts that I wrote down here. So this is everything from fertilization through to development, through to birth.
Birth, all the way through birth. Well, we say everything, it's 27 episodes that are 13 minutes long and that is not enough time to cover everything.
So
it's a lot.
Things I didn't know.
It's a lot.
Like the placenta, I don't think I really knew what it was, except I just thought it was a bit of jelly that the baby is encased in, that you have to put your elbow in just to check it's okay. Yeah. That's what I assumed.
Hollywood stars eat theirs.
Yes, I knew that sometimes eccentric people, celebrities, would serve it up at the christening.
What?
They don't eat it at the christening. They just turn it into like a vitamin and eat it.
I've heard that people make cakes.
Some people do fry it like a liver.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They just like nice bit of, I don't know, sage butter.
But your podcast...
wish I hadn't mentioned this. I wish I hadn't brought that up as a funny thing.
It's awful. But I'm sure it's lovely. If you ate your placenta, by the way, don't email me. I'm sure it was wonderful. Yes, please send me some placenta cake. Yum. what can I just ask? Because I didn't really know what it was, except that I knew it was, you know, the sack that the baby's in.
No,
it's
not.
Like the stuff that it's.
It's. Should I just tell you?
Yeah, go on.
They didn't cover this in Crafty Mom.
It is. It's like the bit that comes out.
Have our own yolk.
It's not the amniotic sac. It's not the amniotic sac.
No,
but it's sort of.
It's an organ created by the baby, so the baby grows it. It attaches. It's a temporary organ.
Like a plug, isn't it?
Like a plug. Exactly. It's like. It's like a hand that goes out and attaches to the wall of the uterus.
How science fiction is this? It's not right, is it? It's like
really
alien.
Weird.
It's
Have you
so
seen a
weird.
Picture of one as well? They look like they're amazing. They look like the sort of veins running through them look like trees, and they're quite big as well. They take up a lot of weight and a lot of space inside the uterus.
And what does the placenta really do?
So it's often been thought of as this kind of like invasive organ that just clings to the mother and then just takes sucks everything out of the mother's body, which it kind of does, but it's way more collaborative than that, and that's what, like, some really interesting placenta science at the moment is kind of showing that it's much more communicative. So it can send signals through the barrier to the mother, and the mother can send signals back through. Obviously it's supplying blood, oxygen.
So when you
nutrients.
Say signals, like what, like an email?
Yeah, hormonal. It's a big endocrine system. So it has its own hormonal signaling, so it can speak to what it needs from
right.
the
so the placenta goes and the the mother or
like
other
yeah.
it can go and give it back.
It's
so
alive.
So
it is alive.
Now, one of the really interesting things in the podcast that you say is that, or that you explore in your interviews, is that you can see the brain of a mother or other parent who's giving birth changing.
Yeah, so there's some wonderful MRI scan research coming out at the moment. So this is my brain is dead. And I'm going to tell you why. Because in pregnancy, you go through such enormous changes in the body. So like huge hormonal changes. You have more estrogen during one pregnancy than you will have in the whole of your life. Your experience in the whole of your life as a woman. And that obviously has huge impacts. But the brain basically does something called neural pruning. So it starts in pregnancy. And what it does is it particular areas of your brain... I can't remember which ones, but I can tell you their functions, will start to shrink and grey matter will grow in other areas. So with particular, it's kind of basically specialises in social functions. Mm. So areas of the brain that are about language learning or recognising emotions in people's faces become like further amplified, I suppose. And it's obviously biologically to prepare a person for looking after a tiny, tiny thing that has to survive. But what I just think is brilliant about this research is that it just makes so much sense, and it's kind of a relief to hear. What you were saying about losing friends, I agree. We've all lost friends to children. Mm-hmm. I've lost friends to my own children. That happens. But there are, like, there are big changes that go on. And, you know, I remember going to see friends who'd had babies when I'd not had a baby and being like, oh, they are really boring now. Or like, why can't you, they just had this baby. And you're like, hey, how are you? And they're like, yeah, the baby, the baby, the baby. And you're like, anything else? Politics? They're like, no, the baby. And it's but because their brain.
There's a neurological reason why this happens to some
absolutely,
people.
Yeah. And it's about a child surviving. It's about a baby surviving.
So is it that, what I sort of picked up from your podcast, is that your brain is so, it just has to zero in, and this is, this not everyone will relate to this, but many, many people do, that your brain is so occupied by zeroing in and just focusing on the survival of the baby, for a while it doesn't give a fuck what your name is or this, how to do a spreadsheet. It's just like, I says, I don't have room for this. I'm focused on one thing only. Other than that, I'm tired. I just need to focus on this. Is that correct? And you can see that under an MRI machine happens to some people.
It's not that. It's not the need that is causing the brain changes. The brain changes happen as a course of the process of pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So, like, it may not be... Obviously, it will happen to certain different extents within people, and then you have your own context and your own experience on top of that that will make you feel different to other people. But, yeah, that's basically what happens.
Because I've had friends and family who've gotten pregnant and then they talk about mom brain. Have you guys heard about this?
Mommy
brain. Where they're like, oh, I have mom brain now. I'm just a little bit stupider. Like, for lack of, they're just like, I'm not firing like I used to. But there's a neurological, like, that's not just a thing they're imagining. And it's not just
because of exhaustion. I don't think it's stupider. It's just distracted. It's just like, I need everything for this thing.
Yeah.
So it's...
Well, but that's how it's always been described as me.
Yeah. Mummy brain. It's all like ooh, and soft and gooey and you can't sort your life out. But I mean, these changes are so big that they people who know how to read MRI scans can look at a selection of brains in front of them and pick out 6 years after the person was pregnant, pick out the people who were pregnant without knowing
six
any...
6 years after?
Wow. Up to 6 years, yeah.
So 6 years later... You're still paying the price for giving birth.
Oh my God, yes.
Longer than that, Deborah.
But the kids
my mom's still paying for it.
Well, yes, in other ways. But neurologically, you can still have after effects. And then when the child's seven, it's gone.
It's a rough... The research is obviously very new because it's... People haven't been bothered to sort of question as to whether or not these are like real physiological, biological changes or if it's just women being pathetic and tired.
We don't research women usually. It's so rare.
Yeah.
So and obviously people who can give birth are predominantly women. So this is a real new area. But the neurologist can see 6 years later, this person's given birth, this person's given birth. That's incredible.
And, you know, like listening to Amy's poetry just then and like everything that we're saying about losing friends and, you know, people changing is kind of true. And I do think that's important to recognise. And just how you feel after you've given birth. And I love that Amy wrote about anxiety. I remember going, one of the first things I did after first, like, outdoor events was I went to a pub with some friends and I got this like massive wave of anxiety and I just desperately didn't want to be there and I was just trying not to cry, but they all just wanted to have a drink and it was just the pub for everyone else, it was being in the pub. And then for me, something was going on where I felt like I was like brittle and I was about to break and I was trying not to cry and sort of, and I remember a friend going, do you want to go home? I was like, yeah, but no one acted on it, no one sort of and I didn't have the courage to do it, but it's real. Like, it's the metamorphosis of pregnancy and motherhood is quite extreme. And thank God we have some science now.
And now we can see that that is really impacting you and can be impacting you for a long time. Mm. This is not to say that people who've given birth or that everyone has given birth experiences the same thing. And this is not to say that 6 years later, people have the same sort of brain fog that they experience right after birth or, in fact, at menopause in some cases. But it is to say that there are still after effects. And if you've been impacted by that, it's good to know that there's science and not to feel like, oh, this is just me, or this is, you know, I now feel isolated because I've got a baby. It's like there are physiological things that happen to you.
Yeah, we don't want people listening and going, we won't employ women for 6 years after they've given birth because they'll get it wrong. They'll mess up the data. We don't want that. Because no. It's not that extreme. And it's not to overplay it. It's just to say that it happens.
And also, men have got loads of hormones that distract them.
Lots.
All the time.
Yeah. So The most hormonal.
The most hormonal and often the most distracted. This is not an advertisement for women. They'll have baby brain for 6 years. It's not like that. But it is just, if you still experience some of these symptoms, it's not you. It is that something that could be happening to you physiologically. Can you talk to us a little bit about the imagery of the Virgin Mary and what cultural and social impact that has had?
Yeah, the Virgin Mary is like a great example of perhaps how we have come to see mothers, right? Maybe arguably one of the most influential mother figures globally. And we had an amazing writer and historian, Dr. Eleanor Cleghorn, on the series, who wrote Unwell Women as well. So she's a feminist medical historian. And we were talking about the image of the Virgin Mary, because there's this amazing missed opportunity there in the story of the Virgin Mary, because she's this, you know, she's going into labor, they're looking for a stable, blah, 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 and then she just has the baby. There's no, like, blood or pain or struggle or anything. It's just this, like...
If you have a nativity play at your children's school this year, can I direct it? Because I've got an idea, you guys. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be push, push, and just like buckets of blood, screaming, stitches.
I'd pay good money to see you direct a nativity play.
Just a suggestion. Most of it's going to be like ER. And then the shepherds are going to come in and be like, oh my God, it's a bloodbath in here. Listen, just suggestions. The wise men are going to be like, no, we don't feel wise in this situation.
I don't understand this. So it's an amazing missed opportunity, really, to sort of talk about the realities, I suppose, of being a birthing person and being a mother.
Especially if you're a virgin. It must be quite tricky to get a baby out.
Yeah.
I've never thought of that before.
It's almost like men wrote the Bible.
Never thought of that before. But a virgin giving birth, it's not going to just slip out. Although, I suppose if you've got God's blessing, maybe it did.
You've probably got a lot going on anyway, right, in birth. So
she's been riding a donkey for days.
She's... We know she's got that brain fog because she's not reserved anywhere, and she should have known Joseph wasn't going to. She should have known. She should have known.
Yeah. I don't know how you'd sit on a donkey in labour. I don't know how you would do it.
That's a great point, too.
Like, get me off this donkey right now. I'm going to die.
At least it would break the hymen if you're a virgin.
Good point.
It's almost that's what it was like for. A man made up the Bible.
But you've said even in places where Christianity isn't focal, it somehow has become this pervasive image of what mothers should be like.
And it's this self-sacrificing, perfect, all-giving, all-loving image of the mother, which is really pervasive. And the problem with that is that it's put on, and this is what we go to, loads of detail in the series, but like it puts so much pressure and onus on the mother figure. There is no evidence that beyond breastfeeding, there are, if you choose to breastfeed, there are like specific biological reasons that the mother has to be with the baby. And we know that. We have loads of same-sex parents, adoptive parents, carers of all sorts. We know that. And yet still, through the whole of our society, there's this like, well, how's the mother doing it? Like, what's she doing? What's she up to? How is she? Oh, she's in control and she's in charge and she knows all the information. And that's just, it's just wrong. You know, we used to allo parent and allo nurse. We used to share.
Sorry, allo parent?
Allo parent. So co-parenting. So we were evolved to parent together. As a community, to pass the baby around, to feed each other's babies.
And to feed each other's babies.
Yeah.
To share breast milk.
To share breast milk.
But doesn't your breast milk have something in it to protect your baby? Or if you live in a small community, that would probably follow that your baby will be allergic to or non-allergic to that same similar things.
I know that's true
in different cultures that there's a shared breastfeeding. I once went to a wedding when the best man said, "Your mother used to breastfeed me." It got awkward, to be honest.
Wow.
Yeah, I had to give a speech as well because I was maid of honour and I had to say to my friend, "And I look forward to breastfeeding your baby." Apparently, that's a thing in this family.
That's like shocking. But then you think, well, that's actually what used to happen.
Yeah. So one of the things I found really, really interesting was this cooperative reproduction. And that a baby has a unique ability to bond with any adult. It doesn't have to be a parent even, or anybody biological to them. They can just bond with a carer. And there's even neurology that, you know, the neurological changes that you have with a mother and a baby, you can have with, or a carer and a, you can, any carer
Absolutely.
And a baby.
Absolutely.
And you can see, so my, I'm adopted, so my mother would have neurologically bonded with me. So there would have been a biological component to our arrangement, our family. Our arrangement, like we made it. Listen, I was 10 days old. I said, look, we'll make an arrangement. That is fascinating that the nuclear family is incredibly new. It's like from the 50s that people started going, mother, father, children all live away from the rest of the family in a little house. Before, people lived in communities. And so this onus on the mother, this responsibility on the mother, plus the Madonna image everywhere, makes women think, who have given birth to a child, I've got to be the be-all and end-all, and I could be a failure at this, and the baby's sort of pretty much my responsibility, unless I give it to the father for a, you know, or the other carer for a little bit.
Yeah. I think that's a really important point on fathers as well, and that we know that they have massive testosterone changes during pregnancy as well as after birth. Their testosterone will lower, oxytocin will go up, they'll adapt. Carers, grandparents, they all adapt. It's really important for us to know that is a really important, like, that other people can care for. And also, I think it's how you see the baby, right? So I think about 30 years ago, it's child development studies have come on loads in the last 30 years, but basically babies were seen as these kind of inert, cortexless blobs that did nothing.
Yes.
But they're not. Like, from the get-go, when they are born, they are watching, and there's this amazing new research where they've sort of seen that babies, like, about 3 months old can pick out the difference of... So they can tell who's closer to them by proximity, who might care for them better, by watching people share saliva. So...
What?
As in...
So French kissing?
Like, French kissing.
You should be French kissing in front of your baby.
Shouldn't you stop?
So they know you're safe.
Who stops
babies
in front of their newborn?
Everything. But, like, if you, like, share foods or clean... I was about to clean your face. Sorry.
Oh, not snogging.
Not snogging. Well, maybe snogging, but like...
What, so a baby sees you go like that to your child, like clean your child's face with spit? Like
they are more... They're a safer, closer, familial connection than this person. It's not like a preference, but they're
when can a baby's eyes focus? I thought babies couldn't focus at first.
They can focus... immediately, they can focus sort of the distance of a breast to an eye, which makes sense, the face. So they're instantly seeing
and
faces.
And some people maintain that in their
own hand. Sorry. It's so true.
Continue.
That sort of like rapidly progresses. And then, they're not long.
So then they're just watching who you spit on.
Yeah, going, just exactly.
Okay, you're a spitter. You probably are going to be a better carer than this non-spitter over here who's like getting a wet wipe and going...
Exactly. The person who can't cope
that
with
that.
That
is fascinating. Yeah. And how
do
they know
a little example, right?
How do they know that, though?
I don't know. So this is all coming
so they
from,
put
like...
the baby's brains under MRI machines,
yeah,
and then they watch
exactly.
them go, spitter, spitter, spitter.
So this is...
Or they must put electrodes, because under an MRI machine, you wouldn't see anybody spitting. So they must put the little electrodes on their head.
I think they do this one by eye movement, the spitting one. But babies in MRI scanners is a really interesting territory, because that's just happening at MIT now.
Yeah.
They've been doing it. So putting a person in an MRI scanner, you need, I think, about 40 minutes of being, like, completely stationary. So putting a baby in an MRI scanner, they have to be awake so they can respond to the stimulus and completely still.
Well, how does any baby do that though? Because
they
their
get
babies
like
are notoriously
tiniest, like tiniest little snapshots of information from a baby's
wow.
brain. They are like utterly fascinating. They're these kind of black boxes of development, but they're the fastest learners on the planet. There's now there's an amazing child development philosopher and a psychologist, and she is now working with companies like Google, DeepMind, and Meta. They want to know how a baby learns.
I don't want Meta to know.
Want them
I don't.
To
Meta
know that.
Should not know. Block it. Block it.
No. Yeah.
Meta's,
because
oh my God, so they can do baby Facebook.
No.
Baby spit Facebook.
Instead of a poke, you get a spit.
Don't tell Zuckerberg any fucking thing
I
about
know.
What's going on in a baby's mind.
But they want to know it for AI.
No!
So that's what they are interested in. They're calling in all these child event... Well, I don't know, there's loads, but definitely
stop
Alison
it.
Kopnik.
Stop it now!
Okay.
No, not don't. You! How do
oh, right.
stop it? Not you!
I don't know, it's terrifying, isn't it? Because
we have to
should
kidnap.
That happen? I don't know if
no,
that should... No,
it shouldn't!
But that's what we're up against. Like they are the fastest, most amazing learning machines on the planet, are babies.
So they're
they
teaching
learn, like,
AI how to learn like babies?
They're trying to figure out, if they can figure out how a baby can learn and make like neurological connections and make its brain pick up what it picks
that
up and the speed that it picks up, then they can get AI... Well, the idea being that they could hopefully... Meet it with AI.
Listen, after this, guys, we have to kidnap Mark Zuckerberg and just not hurt him. Just put him in a very safe space with no devices so he cannot do anything anymore.
Scary.
It's crazy.
It's really scary.
I find that absolutely the most terrifying thing I've ever heard. Zuckerberg is capturing children, holding them down under MRI machines in a special brace, learning how their brain develops so he can teach a robot to do the same but without any empathy.
That's exactly it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
We are so done for.
That means the robots will all be like toddlers, right? Because aren't toddlers like functioning people without empathy? Did I make that up? I don't
what
have
that
children.
Emma Stone movie was
I don't know
about?
If you could
That's
tell.
Terrifying.
Toddlers are very hard to study because they are so contrary.
And
you
are
can't
a toddler,
get any truth out of them.
Listening to this, keep moving, keep moving, keep moving. If you're a toddler, run fast.
Run.
You see, you do not stop. Someone ties you into an MRI machine, you keep moving, kid. You keep moving.
If you see a man in a gray T-shirt, run. Run.
I beg you not to be still because they will capture what's in your brain and they will give it to a robot and the robots don't have any empathy and they're not building empathy in. Oh my God. Listen, I thought this was going to be a lot more relaxing.
Debra's really freaked out right now.
I don't want to upset your baby or agitate your baby.
He's been upset and agitated since we got here, don't we?
Has he?
No.
Fair enough.
He's not a feminist.
No, he loves it.
Well, that's not what you just said.
And speaking of which, your baby should follow the guilty feminist on Facebook.
Yes, absolutely. Let's get an account now.
I have a question. I don't know if you can tell, but I don't have children. And I've never tried have one. So as one of the non-child people of the world, I am aware that sometimes we say really dumb stuff to the child people, to pregnant people, to, you know what I mean? Like, or to people who have kids.
Give me an example.
Like, I mean, the big one, to parents or like, kind of like before someone gets pregnant, the big one would be like, oh, are you trying to get pregnant? Well, I've heard once you stop trying, it just happens. You know, those sorts of things.
Oh, God.
Or like the whole thing around breastfeeding. Like, I've heard this, we're always here. What is, now, there's a lot of stuff that the non-parent people know we shouldn't talk about anymore. But is there one thing that keeps coming up that the non-parents are saying to the parents that really you're just like, you got to stop weighing in?
What shouldn't you say to parents or prospective parents?
I might have made that way more difficult.
I feel like there were seven questions and then is like...
What is the thing that people who don't have children should not say to people who have children? Because I know we're doing something that we shouldn't be doing.
Why do you think that?
Because there's proof. I've just given two examples.
I think rather than things that you shouldn't say, I think being there to listen and not just assuming that, like, I think it's really easy to sort of kind of...
No, be assy about it.
I don't think it's really easy maybe to belittle the experience of parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And to not think about it as this, like, massive change that you maybe weren't expecting. And actually, oh, fuck, things are really hard. The relationship's really hard. I don't know about work. I don't know about my career. I'm worried about this and da-da-da. The child's like this. I have feelings that I didn't expect to have, like negative feelings and as well as lovely feelings. I think it's, rather than being afraid to say the wrong thing, just being really open to hear anything and to receive it and kind of let that conversation be a conversation rather than being like, oh yeah, it's just, you know, it's just kid. It's so easy to put it all down, and in a way it is so ridiculous, and you end up doing stupid things, and you have arguments over bananas, and you like, you don't sleep and you lose your mind. But I mean, I walk around, definitely there are people who I feel like I've lost out of my life because the conversation isn't easy anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, or I worry that I'm really boring. It's my greatest worry in life, that I'm now
We should take those jokes out of the top of this. This was not the right episode.
No, no, no. But I think it's all fair, because when you'd like, if you haven't, or maybe you have like a really easy ride with parenting, or whatever. But I like deeply worry. I feel like I need to go sit down with friends and be like, I'm sorry, I've been boring for 2.5 years, but I actually have found things really tough, or I'm really tired, or I feel like I've changed. I feel like a different person. So just having it open to that.
I'm not bored of people with babies. I feel I become less relevant. It's more the other way around, where I sort of think, oh, well, I'm not the one they want to talk to anymore. They want to talk to other people with babies. And I think that's not always true. Loads of my friends are like, please talk to me about something other than babies.
Yeah, please.
And other people are like, they just go into that zone where they're like, they want to be with other people having that experience. And I think that's totally fair enough. I absolutely get it. So it's, I mean, it's clearly a joke, but it's clearly a little bit of a selfishness in you where you go, oh, it won't be the same. But I really took a big pledge to myself not to leave women with babies out, or assume they won't want the job, or assume that they won't, oh, she's just had a baby, she won't want to be invited to this, or she won't. Because actually it's always nice to be invited in, and often new parents will go, yeah, absolutely. And they'll come and they'll bring the baby, or they'll leave the baby, but don't write people off, I think, is what's really important.
Yeah. Thank you. I
don't know if we've got I think we've hardly got any minutes left, but does anyone, we've got probably got time for one quick question. Anyone got a question? Yes.
So India is both someone that is very knowledgeable and researched about, you know, pregnancy, gestation and being a new parent, as well as being a parent. What can we all do to better support those that are having children? I'm a pediatric nurse. I see how difficult it is. I have seen new parents in A&E in tears, feeling like they're not doing anything right. And we are now, with research, realising how important perinatal care is for both child and, you know, child bearer. What do you feel is important that we should be supporting to, you know, enable our next generation to flourish and be better to those that choose to have children?
I mean, so much. There is so much, isn't there? Where to start? I mean, we could look at our maternity services, which leave people who've given birth absolutely floundering a lot of the time, often through no fault of the people who work in them, but through a lack of funding and a lack of interest in many ways in, like, the outcomes for people. I think looking at, you know, it's this pressure on the individual parents of, like, getting it right and not looking at the bigger societal issues that are ticking away, as I say, like time bombs, but they're already exploding. You know, we know that a lack of stable housing leads to preterm or low weight births. We know that racial inequalities lead, multiple studies have shown as racial inequalities lead to poorer outcomes for both mother and children. We could look at air pollution. You know, that is as much of a danger for miscarriage, it's now believed, as smoking. And yet still, there's all this, like, pressure on the individual to, like, carry and bring up this infant. And we've kind of forgotten it is a society, it's a societal job.
It takes a village.
Yeah. And in many ways, you could say, well, it's your choice to have a child, but, you know, the economy would hate it if everyone just sort of started thinking like that as well. So, you know, there is a societal responsibility. And I think, like I was saying, just listening, you know, maternal mental health is a huge, huge, huge problem. Luckily, in the UK, we actually, in good news, have some of the best care, which is great. You know, some of the biggest, the most spaces for mothers and mother and baby units. But, yeah, I think listening and not writing this experience off as, like, it's so ordinary, isn't it, having a baby, and yet it's so extraordinary, and I think being able to hold both of those truths in the same place.
Wonderful. We don't have time to go into it, but I really ask you, if you can, if you have access, to listen to this series that you do. And there's an image by an artist called Catherine Opie, which is Catherine as a butch woman holding her baby in a Madonna-like pose. And it's the most extraordinary thing when you see it, because you realise you don't see that. So Google Catherine Opie and that image of mother and baby. It's a really interesting thing when you talk about people who don't look like, you know, quote-unquote mothers,
yeah,
and how we often don't include them because of this pervasive image of the Madonna.
Maternity catalogues.
Oh. Maternity catalogues. There are so many interesting points in this series. Tell us, where can we hear it and what's it called?
It's called Child. You can hear on BBC Sounds or wherever you get your podcasts.
Excellent. Big round of applause for India Rakerson, everybody. Can I also say a huge round of applause for Abigailiah Shimon? Abigailiah?
Yeah.
Where can we see you?
If you want to follow me on Instagram, that would be great, because, like I said, I'm trying to get to 10,000 followers, and it's not happening.
You're huge on TikTok, though, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm huge on TikTok. It's very frustrating. Children love me. It's the hair. Anyway, I have a podcast as well called Neurodivergent Moments that I co-host with my buddy Joe Wells. I have ADHD. Joe is autistic. And we talk to other creative neurodivergent people about how our minds are different. So available wherever you listen to podcasts. And we are doing a live recording on May 26th at the Old Firehouse Station in Oxford. So if you live in the Oxford area, come see us on May 26th. Obviously no one in here, but yeah, for the record, people.
And are you doing Global Pillage on the 9th of May?
Yeah, but they're not on sale yet, but keep an eye out on my socials, on Guilty Feminist socials. We will be recording episodes in May and in June.
And we are back here on the 10th of April. If all of you could come and sit in exactly the same places, we've really enjoyed you as an audience. That'd be great. We've got some incredible guests for you then as well. Also, we're touring Australia and New Zealand. If you've got any friends over there, and please listen to the podcast. You can give any individual episode a great review and a 5-star review, because it really helps other people find it. Also, between us, there are some anti-trans people who've been giving us low reviews just to sort of fuck with that, because we always had 5 stars. I haven't looked lately, but there was a little while where they were like, just flood them with 1 stars to bring their stars down. So it really sucks. So if you can give us a few 5-star reviews, that would really help us out. I think we're still up there. It's just, I saw that happening and I saw people saying it online and I was like, oh. So I don't know. I never really look at that stuff, because I still love that you're listening and you're coming, and, you know, so I really appreciate whatever you can do to tell someone else about the show or support our new ventures. This has been a really nice night. We've had some great guests, right? Please give it up for India Rakerson and Amy Aker. Abigailiah Shimon. And everyone here at King's Place. As well as all of you for listening, for coming, for giving us your attention. Thank you so much. You've been a lovely audience. We've been The Guilty Feminist. I've been Deborah Frances White. Good night. You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist. With me, Deborah Frances White, guest co-host Abigailiah Shimon, and our very special guest, India Rakerson and Amy Aker. The recording engineer was Chris Sharp. The Guilty Feminist theme tune was composed by Mark Hodge. The producer was Tom Sills. Skipping the spontaneity shop. Thanks to Rachel Craft, Gina Dicia, Zainab Mohammed, and everyone at King's Place, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com. reason I've got a cough tonight, but I don't think it's contagious. I think it's something I've got stuck in my throat. It's all right. I haven't given your baby anything. You've got your placenta in place, yep. Protecting him. We'll eat it later. Thank you so much.
The Guilty Feminist is provided exclusively from Acast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.